are listening to Strawberry Spring, based on a short story by Stephen King.
Mom, watch out!
I know, Henry, it's just hard to see through the fog.
Where are those lights coming from?
They're right in my mirror, I can barely see!
Mom, look out!
Over here. This one's still alive. Grab the stretcher. Give me a hand. Get ready on three. One, two, three.
We have one boy here, looks like 14 to 16 years of age. Car accident. He suffered lacerations on his face and blunt force trauma to his head.
Hurry up, we're losing him. He's having a seizure. How much longer?
I don't know. In this soup, 5, maybe 10 minutes? I don't know.
Just step on it.
He's awake. Doctor!
Henry, can you hear me? He's moving. Don't try to speak.
I tried to sit up, but my head was splitting. I could hear people running around the room, but somehow I remained calm like I was adrift at sea.
Henry, just nod if you can hear me.
I barely had the strength to move, let alone talk. Everything was a blur. But the room came into focus just long enough for me to see my arms bandaged. My right leg was broken. I had no idea how serious my injuries were.
Nurse, give him something for the pain. He's gonna need to rest.
I couldn't stay awake long enough to follow what was going on. I passed out.
He's gonna sleep a while. Nurse, please make a note in his chart. He was able to follow some basic commands.
I drifted in and out of consciousness. Shadows and light passed over me. One morning, or it could have been night, I don't remember, I heard the door open. I wasn't sure at first, but there was the silhouette of a man watching me. He wandered into the room and hovered above me like some kind of spirit.
Dad, is that you?
The shape just stood there staring down at me. It must have been my imagination because it looked like it was crying. Whoever or whatever that was held my hand for a moment as I drifted back into the black abyss.
Good morning, Henry. How are you feeling today?
Hi, Dr. Howard. I'm okay.
How are your headaches?
They seem to be going away.
Good. I'm just gonna take a look at your eyes. This might be a little bright. Can you follow the light for me without moving your head? Good. Everything looks okay.
The doctor had come to see me regularly over what I think was a few days. It's hard to tell. But there was something about this time that didn't feel right. I could see from the look on his face something was wrong, but for whatever reason, I couldn't figure out what it was. It was blank, expressionless.
Henry, has anyone had a chance to talk to you about what's happened?
No, I know we were in a car accident, but that's it. Are my mother and brother okay?
Henry, this isn't going to be easy to hear, but...
My mother and brother were not okay. In fact, they were dead. Their problems were over. Mine, on the other hand, were just beginning.
Hello? Is this thing on? Am I coming through? This is Kevin Hartigan. I'm 14 years old, and I live in the New Sharon Home for Boys.
I had been staying in the New Sharon Home for Boys for about a year. I shared a room with a few other teenagers. We were all orphans. It was okay, I guess. We read comic books in the rec room. There was a TV that we could watch The Lone Ranger on, so that was good. In spite of there being a few dozen other boys around my age, though, I never really made what I would call friends with anyone. Kevin was an orphan there at the same time. I guess he was the closest thing I had to a friend.
Hey, Henry.
Huh?
Headmaster's office.
He told me to send you in on my way out, so that's what I'm doing.
I knew the drill by now. I'd head down the hallway, listen to what he has to say, then go back to my room. But it wasn't his fault. He was just doing his job.
Come in. Henry, take a seat.
You wanted to see me?
I did. I'm not sure if you heard yet, but we have a family coming here tomorrow, and they're looking to adopt. I know this won't be an issue for you, but I have to remind everybody to be on their best behavior. You are representing the New Sharon Home for Boys.
Yes, sir.
The New Sharon Home for Boys, we called it the New Prison Home for Strays. I was 15 years old by then. Even I knew no one wanted to adopt a teenager. They wanted the younger kids. The ones they could raise and mold into reflections of themselves. By 15, it was too late. I was who I was. My record or personal history did not work in my favor. The accident was referred to as a traumatic event, which is another way of saying bad luck. It was what it was, and we are who we are. That didn't stop the headmaster from trying to convince me I had a shot.
Henry, my boy, don't get discouraged. Have I ever told you about William Bell?
I'm not sure, sir.
William Bell was a lot like you. He lost both his parents in a car accident, had no next of kin. If I recall, he was brought in when he was 13 years old. He was afraid of his own shadow. If I'm not mistaken, he was eventually adopted and moved to Maine. It's a beautiful state, but it can get cold in the winter. He rose above his own adversity and chose not to let it get the best of him. I'll be damned if he didn't make the most of himself.
How did he do that, sir?
By going to his classes and getting good grades. And sure enough, one day, it might have been on his 17th birthday, he was adopted by a couple from Syracuse.
I thought you said Maine.
Right, Maine. I may have mixed up where he moved to, but what I'm trying to say is don't give up hope. The family coming in today could be the right fit for you, and you might be the right fit for them. Either way, my point is, be patient, and good things will happen for you. You're young. You have your whole life ahead of you.
Yes, sir.
Good boy. Put her there.
I shook his hand. I wanted to believe him, but all I could think was William Bell spent 4 years of his life waiting for someone to adopt him. I know he was just trying to be positive. I always wondered if there really was a William Bell, or that's just the kind of name that circulates among people that run these institutions.
You've got a powerful grip there, Henry. Now, do me a favor and send in Weston when you get back to your room.
I never knew if the headmaster genuinely thought someone would adopt me or if he was just trying to keep my hopes up. Who knows, maybe his hopes up too. He seemed sad for most of us in there. He knew the truth. Saying it out loud just made it real.
What do you guys think? Anyone got a shot?
Maybe if you're under 10, otherwise, no way. What are you doing over there?
Trying to tie my necktie.
Yeah, it looks great if you're making a noose.
Can you give me a hand? I never learned how to tie one.
Your dad never showed you?
No, he went to Korea. He died before he ever had a chance.
Sorry. Here, I'll show you. This is how my dad taught me. Picture in your house a cat and a mouse. As the cat naps, the mouse scurries past. The cat awakes, and a chase takes place. The cat jumps, with dinner in sight, around the chair, not once, but twice. As the mouse hides, the cat looks inside. Wiggle as it might, the poor cat is stuck tight.
Hey, that's pretty good. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. But you still don't have a shot.
I sat in the waiting area lined with wood-paneled walls, staring straight ahead. The longer I looked at the wood grain, the more I thought I saw images embedded in it. One by one, my fellow orphans and I sat on the bench. As each one of us entered the headmaster's office, we slid down the bench, one seat closer to going to a new home. We sat, we waited, we were all quiet. It's not that we couldn't talk to each other, but there wasn't anything to say. Everyone knew what was going on inside that office. Judgment Day. Finally, the headmaster opened the door.
Henry, come on in and meet Mr. and Mrs. Curran.
I got up and started walking. It was about a 15-foot walk. I knew that because the square tiles on the floor were 1 foot each. I counted as I walked, mostly trying to calm my nerves.
One, two, three.
It might as well have been a mile. I've read that prisoners on death row think the last walk to the electric chair feels like a mile. This could have felt longer. It didn't matter, though. An hour and a half waiting in the hallway, and I finally got my chance. Would it be a stay of execution or not? That was the question.
Henry, please meet the Currens.
This was the first time I'd met a family that was looking to adopt. I'll never forget it. She wore a yellow dress with her hair pinned up. He had Brill cream in his hair. That smell is impossible to forget. Strong and citrusy. I instantly thought of my father. He used to wear it. And when I'd give him a hug, the scent went right up my nose. He had a tie on, and I guess they were as nervous as I was, because he made some small talk.
Nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure to meet you too, Henry.
Hey, nice tie.
I hated him already. We both knew it was a shitty tie, and to make matters worse, it wasn't even tied well. I could tell they were an East Coast type of family. Probably came from money. They were the types that tried really hard to have a baby, but it never really happened for them.
How long have you been here at the boys' home?
About a year and a half. I came here right after my family...
Just like many of the boys here in the home, Henry's family had an accident, and we were fortunate enough to have him join the rest of our fine, upstanding young men.
As I was saying, right after my family died.
Mrs. Kern had a sadness in her eyes that reminded me of my own mother. When I looked at her, I felt like she had already given up on having a baby. Adoption was her only hope. And even though she was polite, I could tell I was not going to be offering her the hope she was looking for. I didn't think any of the boys at the home would. She needed to find some young girl from a nice family that got in trouble and couldn't deal with the scandal. Send her to her grandparents for the school year and come home good as new, minus a baby.
So, tell us about yourself.
Okay. I like comic books and listening to the radio. I'm pretty good at school.
What classes do you like?
English.
Really?
Yeah. One day I hope to be a writer.
That's good. It's good to have something to work towards.
Henry's being modest. He is one of our best students here.
Thank you, sir.
After that, we made some more small talk, and 15 minutes later, I went back to being an orphan. I didn't know what meeting them would be like, but I was pretty sure I didn't pass the audition. After leaving the Currens, I figured I'd take a walk around the grounds. Being an orphan is hard enough, but the boys' home was crowded. Sometimes the only way to get any space was to go outside. I thought about Mrs. Curran. Even though I didn't have any illusions about getting adopted, I wondered what it would be like if she was my mother. Hearing about teenagers getting adopted was like a fairy tale, like Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy. It just wasn't real. The only thing you have in this world is what you can see, touch, taste, and feel. Walking around was the only thing that felt real to me. It's the first time I realized it helped me clear my head. It still does. As my feet crushed the dried leaves on the ground, I saw something move behind the trees. At first, I thought it was a shadow, but then I saw what I thought was a man who seemed to be watching. I moved towards him, but he ducked behind a hedge of vines and ficus trees. I sped up. I was running after him before I knew it. The man was fast. He was more of a shadow, a figure that I couldn't make out. I stopped to catch my breath, and for a split second, his face turned. I gasped. He looked just like my father. I saw my breath in the cold air and started to run after him again. This time I was faster, passing one tree after another until I caught up. It was only a shadow. It was March and the spring colors were bright. The sun blinded me and my head started to pound. The world started to spin. I lost consciousness and fell back.
Hey, there's someone over here behind the statue. Get some lights over here. Jesus, it's another body.
This one's a guy. Christ, he's alive.
Yeah, help him up.
Where am I?
Hey, kid, you're in the middle of the quad. You want to explain what you're doing here?
I was walking to my girlfriend's apartment when I got dizzy and passed out.
What were you doing out after curfew?
It wasn't after curfew when I started walking. Look, I don't know how long I was out for. What time is it?
It's just after 11. You have any ID?
Here. I'm Henry Denton. Captain Spencer won't want to, but he can vouch for me. One of them walked back to their patrol car and called it in. The other stayed with me, shining a flashlight in my face. Do you mind turning that away? It's pretty bright.
How about you stay quiet until you check out?
I looked around. That's when I realized I passed out in the middle of the quad, right behind a statue of Deborah Sampson, a Massachusetts woman who disguised herself as a man to serve in the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War. Just for a moment, I could have sworn she came to life. Musket in hand, she aimed the barrel at me and looked like she was about to shoot. I wondered if the cops didn't miss their chance to have a man dressed as a woman. Maybe then they could have caught Spring-Heeled Jack.
He checks out. We can let him go.
Thank you, officers.
Don't thank me, pal. You're lucky the captain knows you. If it was up to me, I would have clubbed you over the head and dragged you into the station.
Do yourself a favor and go straight to your girlfriend's place. If we find you out again after curfew, you're getting arrested. I don't care who you know. Got it?
Got it.
Good. Now get the hell out of here.
Hey, Henry, wait up.
Whew, thought that was you.
What are you doing out here at this hour?
Well, I could ask you the same. I'm just finishing the late shift at the station.
Late shift? I thought you were the morning guy.
Morning, noon, night. I'm here whenever you need to hear me. Hey, what's going on with the cops back there? Are they giving you a hard time?
Kind of, but not really. Thankfully, Captain Spencer vouched for me.
Well, that's good. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer, right?
Something like that.
You know, I'm not sure if you're turned around, but this isn't the way back to the dorms.
I'm on my way to Rachel's.
I'll never understand what she sees in you. You're a lucky guy. I've never been able to keep a long-term relationship. Something always gets in the way.
Like what?
I'm not quite sure. But maybe one day you'll help me figure it out.
Maybe.
Until then, this is where I go left and you go right. I gotta crash.
You on the morning shift?
Like I said, morning, noon, and night. If you're listening, I'm there for you. You know, keep you company on these long, foggy nights.
You know how I know you're perfect for radio?
Know how?
You spew an endless stream of bullshit.
You have no idea.
So after Captain Spencer vouched for me, they let me go. And here I am.
Thank God they didn't arrest you. I keep telling you it was risky coming over here after curfew.
Well, I know, but by the time I finish at the paper, it's late. Plus, I don't want you to be here alone if you don't have to be.
What if Spring-Heeled Jack caught you out?
Then I'd be the first guy he kills. So far, I think I'm safe.
Well, you're here now. That's all that matters. Let's try to get some sleep. Tomorrow's another day.
I laid down next to Rachel. There was just enough moonlight creeping into the room to remind me how beautiful she was, especially when she was sleeping. I closed my eyes and shut out the light. The only rest I could get was when I was in complete darkness. But Rachel was wrong about one thing. Tomorrow wouldn't be just another day for Hannah Gray.
anything new about the weather?
Like what?
Like, when is this shit gonna let up? I can tell you right now, if we have a snowball's chance in hell of catching this guy, it ain't gonna be in the middle of this fog, that's for sure.
Yeah, at least it's quiet out here. Other than your Irish ass, all I can hear are the crickets.
Oh, fuck. What was that? Ice? Hit me with your flashlight, would you?
Ah, fuck. Don't move. Don't move.
What do you mean, don't move? Help me up, would you? What is that on me? Is that?
It's blood.
That night, they found Hannah Gray's head. It was split in two, with one half on the north side of the quad and the other half on the south side. The kill was so precise. Her glasses were cut right down the middle. Another night had passed and another girl was dead. Springheel Jack was like a spark on the horizon. You could see it just long enough to know you can't catch it. I sat next to Anne. We were both sobering up. Finding a head will do that to you.
How long do you think we'll have to wait here?
Beats me. Probably until they get all the paperwork done.
You know, if you told me I'd be coming back to New Sharon in 1976 to investigate Springheel Jack, I wouldn't have believed you.
I get that.
If you told me while I was back here you and I would make amends, I would have told you you're crazy.
I get that too.
But Henry, if you would have told me we'd find the head of a victim in the same exact spot where Chelsea Spencer's head was found, I'd tell you.
That Springheel Jack was back.
Yes.
Anne closed her eyes. It was all too much for her. I think she was able to block it out when she moved away. The murder. The book. Me. Coming back here was all too much. As for me, I sat next to her on the bench in the hall. She leaned her head on my shoulder, as much out of affection as exhaustion. Or maybe she was just drunk? I watched everyone run back and forth one by one. They'd hurry into Chief Spencer's office. They'd exit just as fast as they entered. We waited, just like at the boys' home. Sit and wait your turn. Your time will come. Just be patient. But what if I didn't want to be patient anymore? What if my time had come and gone?
Denton, Bray, ass is in here, now!
Jesus Christ!
Let's go.
Why am I nervous? We didn't do anything wrong.
Some authority figures you never outgrow.
What is this? Is this some kind of sick joke?
What do you mean?
You know what I mean! He placed her in the same exact spot as Ch... You know where she was. And now we have a new victim. Her parents were already contacted. They're identifying her right now.
Jesus.
Jesus is right. Do you know how hard it was to make that call? Do you?
I can only imagine. I'm sorry you had to be the one to do it.
Yeah, well, so am I. But this stops now. I have John Dancy in custody right down the hall.
You found him?
It wasn't hard. He's been living with his mother just outside of town. You should see him, strung out on dope. He looks like every other junkie reject.
Do you really think he's Springheel Jack?
We looked at every suspect at the time. He had access. He knew the campus. And after he found the Kerman girl, we never suspected him.
What about Amalara?
We might pick him up again, too, for questioning. I've had a theory for a long time. What if they were in on it together? Amalara is in jail. Dancy goes out and kills. Gives him the perfect alibi.
Have you ever heard such a thing?
If Amalara and Dancy were to somehow orchestrate multiple murders across this long of a time span, it would be unprecedented.
It would explain a lot. Two different people. One can lead a normal life while one kills, and vice versa.
Hello. Are you sure? How long? All right, just give me a minute, would you?
Are you okay?
What is it?
Here. We're all gonna need this. Drink up.
What's going on?
The girl's parents. They're in the hallway. They want to come in and talk to me about the case.
Then we better...
Don't even think about it. You two are mixed up in this case more than any two people on Earth. You think I'm gonna face these parents alone? You got another thing coming. Now sit down and follow my lead. Don't say anything you don't need to. Hi. Please, come in.
Chief Spencer, thank you for seeing us.
We understand you lost your own daughter to this animal.
Yeah, I did. 8 years ago this month.
It can't be. This is crazy. After all these years, they look exactly the same.
We need to know what you're doing to find the rest of her.
Believe me, we have every available man on the job. Springheel Jack has a history of leaving the remains somewhere on campus, so we will find her.
But are you going to catch him?
We're going to do everything we can. If I can introduce you, this is Anne Bray. She's here from the Globe to help with the investigation.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
And this is Henry Denton. They were both students during the first wave of killings. Henry actually wrote the book on them. You should know I have a suspect in custody right now. And I intend on getting a confession out of him and any accomplices he may have.
They don't remember me. How could they? 1961, it was 15 years ago. I sat right across from them in the headmaster's office. She has more gray now, but her hair is basically the same style. His hair is receding, but the Brill Cream. I'd know that scent anywhere. I was right about what I knew back then. They didn't want to adopt a teenage boy. They wanted a baby. They found one, Marcia. She was 2 at the time. Now she was 17 years old. They don't remember me, but I remember them. I didn't feel it at the time, but the rejection, I can feel it now. Emotional memory, all coming back. Mr. and Mrs. Curran, I'm sorry to meet you under these circumstances.
You seem so familiar. Have we met?
Do I tell them who I am? That I was a scared teenager in an orphanage just looking for a home? Do I tell them I wanted parents? Do I tell them how sorry I am for their loss, or do I just avert my eyes and sympathize for them? Maybe the answer is all of the above.
Strawberry Spring, executive produced by Lee Metzger, Jared Gutstadt, and Philip Alberstadt. Starring Garrett Hedlund, Milo Ventimiglia, Horizon Guardiola, Sydney Sweeney, Ken Marino, Al Madrigal, and Breck Bassinger. Audio up in-house production by Jordana Glick-Franzheim and Laura Ramadan. Edited by Carrie Caulfield-Arick and Jeremiah Zimmerman. Sound design and mix by Jeremiah Zimmerman. Score by Jeff Peters. Songs and music by Jared Gutstadt and Jesse Siebenberg. Strawberry Spring is published in Stephen King's short story collection Night Shift. Available in paperback and ebook from Anchor Books and as an audiobook from Penguin Random House Audio. For the full list of production credits, please visit audioup.com. You can find more podcasts from iHeartRadio on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.